I'd like to talk today about the idea of finding the perfect opportunity. How do you do that? How do you find the perfect opportunity? I'll start by saying I don't think there is one. And I think a lot of young men get stuck. And they get stuck because they're looking for a perfect opportunity that never exists. It never comes in. The ship never comes in. I think if you look at Joseph, God put him in a situation. It was not the perfect situation. If you look at Daniel or Hananiah or Mishael or Azariah, God did not put them in a good situation. It was not a perfect opportunity, but it was where he placed them. He had a plan. He had something for them to do. I want to help you get unstuck. I want to help you to bear much fruit for the kingdom of God. So here's the principle. We need to be faithful in little. Faithful in little. We're going to talk about that today. But before we get there, we have to talk about some common strongholds. So listen, God delivered the children of Israel out of Egypt. They were in captivity. God delivers them. God raises up a deliverer in Moses, and they come out under the blood of the Lamb. He brings them out. He brings them into the land. Okay, so he puts... Egypt is a type of the world, and he delivers them from sin's power, from the penalty of sin, from its presence, and he is even delivering them from the pleasure of sin. But then he leads them out, and he leads them out into the desert, and for 40 years he works on the children of Israel to deliver Egypt out of them. He first takes them physically out of Egypt, and now he's going to work to take Egypt out of them. He gives them a law. He doesn't give them the law until they're under the blood. And he gives them a law and says, here's how you ought to live. And so we have a lot of mindsets. We have a lot of strongholds. We have vain imaginations that need to be pulled down. And here's some of them that we all have to be delivered of. Number one, the world owes me a living. If you have that mindset, you are not a giver, you are a taker. God was a giver. For God so loved, he gave his son. It's more blessed to give than to receive. We need to be givers, not takers. The world does not owe you a living, and the sooner that you can figure that out, the better off you will be. It's like this. I had a cousin many, many years ago. He's one of these guys that moved sideways for 50 years, okay? Basically, hey, when they start paying me more, I'll start working more. It doesn't work that way. I've never asked for a raise ever in my life. Zig Ziglar used to tell the story about little Johnny. He worked in a grocery store, and in those days, there was a grocery store on each side of the street, and if one grocery store ran out of an item, they would shoot across the street, and they would borrow 6 cans of beans and fly back and put it on their shelf. And little Johnny would always be running over, and he'd fly in, grab 6 cans, and he'd fly back to the store. And Zig would comment to his boss, and he'd say, boy, that little Johnny sure does work hard. He says, yes, he does. As a matter of fact, he's fixing to get a raise. And he was puzzled by that statement. He said, how do you know he's going to get a raise? I know he's going to get a raise because if his boss doesn't give him a raise, I'm going to. And see, when we perform at a certain level, people begin to notice us. Good things happen. Another one of the things is we think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think. It's all about us. But the scripture says, by humility and by the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. And that we should think of others more highly than ourselves. We need to tear down that stronghold. Hey, here's another one. We're not faithful in little. And when that big opportunity comes, then I'll give it my very best. It doesn't work that way. Think about Luke 19. Think about the parable of the 10 pounds. Jesus, a man came from a faraway kingdom and he gave pounds to men. And the first one came at the end of the age when the king returns. And the first one brings the one and he says, and I gained 10 more. And the Lord rewards him with 10 cities. And the next one, thy pound hath gotten 5 more. And he rewards him with 5. And then there's the one who went and hid the pound. It's a very interesting parable for the socialists that like to say that Jesus was a socialist. Because he takes the one and he gives it to him who has 10. And he gives it to him who has 10 because he's faithful. And he'll take that one more and he'll do great things with it for the kingdom of God. It's interesting that God rewards faithfulness in the little by giving more authority. He gives cities to rule over. He gives more authority. So if you want big opportunity, you have to be faithful in little. Here's another one. I'll make a word up. Commitophobia. We're afraid of commitment. And young men in particular in our day and age, they're afraid of commitment. They're keeping their options open. And can I say to you that the sooner you commit to anything, the better off you will be. The fastest way to be in 40 and having accomplished nothing is to keep your options open. Young men aren't getting married because they're waiting for perfect, Mrs. Perfect. Hey, guess what? If Mrs. Perfect comes along, she's going to marry you, and she's not going to be Mrs. Perfect anymore, okay? Because she's marrying Mr. Imperfect. Perfect isn't out there. Plug in to what you're doing. Plug into it right now. Hey, here's the deal. If you start doing anything well, you'll start to like it. Children can start playing a piano because their parents say, I want you to play the piano. And they don't like to play the piano. And the teacher comes and says, you need to practice. And they complain about practice. And then they play for grandma. And grandma says, wow, Susie, that was incredible. So Susie goes back to practice and she feels a little bit better about playing the piano now. And then the relatives come over and she plays for all the relatives and they all cheer. Susie, you're wonderful, you're wonderful. Guess what? She wants to practice a little bit more. There's an interesting book called Outliers. I don't recommend everything in it, but there's a couple of really cool things in there. One of them is the idea that it takes 10,000 hours to move from being the person that plays the piano on Sunday morning to Carnegie Hall. It's just 10,000 hours. Bill Gates happened to grow up next to the University of Michigan, and they just put a new computer in there, and his dad happened to have access to that computer, so he got free programming time. Guess how many hours Bill Gates had before he was even 20, of programming time? 10,000 hours. 10,000 golf balls. Not that I think that sports is pretty much a waste of time, but it's the principle. You have to keep working at it. How about slothfulness? That's another stronghold. One of my mentors told me a very simple truth. He said, Powers, hard work ain't easy. We think that things are just going to come because we're the right person. It's by hard work, labor. See, the soul of the sluggard desires. He wants it, but he's not willing to pay the price. It's the soul of the diligent that should be made fat. You have to work hard, and you have to work over a long season. I think another stronghold is we have too small of a vision. Hey, if you're going to do something, do it in a bigger way. Make sure that there's a big enough opportunity, because it takes just as much energy for a small vision as a big vision. And I think we have too small of a vision of God. I think we have a lot of people have get-rich-quick schemes. They want to take a shortcut. But the proverb says that wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. It's the same principle, little by little. When they went into the land, take the land a little bit at a time, or else it will overwhelm you. You reclaim a little at a time. I think one of the things that people think someday they're going to be rich, and so they don't save today. You need to save money today. The law of sowing and reaping. See, we reap in a different season than we sow. We reap in this field that we sow in. We reap more than we sow. But there's always a time between when we sow and when we reap. And when salespeople are in a slump, I always ask them, not what you're doing right now. What were you doing 60 days ago? What were you doing 90 days ago? Because you're reaping today what you sowed 60 and 90 days ago. Okay, here's the last stronghold. I cannot serve my heathen boss. I've got a heathen boss. That guy is so heathen. If I could just work for a Christian. Okay, we need to get rid of that language, okay? Because we want to do as the Apostle Paul said in Colossians, he also said in Ephesians 6:5, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will, doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. Your reward is from God, not from him. You need to look through that person right to God. You need to serve with singleness of heart and not with just eye service, not just when he's around, but you need to serve the Lord through that person. So here's my points of application. You need to start to shine where you are. Instead of looking for that great opportunity, why don't you start right where you are today? And maybe you need to close off some of your options and take the one option that God has put and become excellent where you are. I think that some people right now, you could put them in a McDonald's starting working at minimum wage, and within 9 months, they'd run the place. And within 18 months, they'd be running four McDonald's because their character is excellent, they're diligent, and they've got a servant's heart. Sometimes we need to change our attitude. George Bailey needed to have a new mindset. He had to have a new perspective to realize just exactly what he had. All he was doing was complaining and looking at what he didn't have. And when we're always looking at other people, we're always going to be a little bit off kilter. That's why we need to serve as unto the Lord. That's why Jesus endured the cross for the joy that was set before him. He kept his eyes on his Father. You and I need to keep our eyes on Christ. We can carry any cross. So keep your eyes on Christ. Serve where you are as unto the Lord, looking at him as your sole rewarder. He sees your work. He sees your attitude. You need to outwork everybody else. And we need to trust in the Lord with all of our heart, to lean not on our own understanding, in all our ways to acknowledge him. And if we'll do that, he will direct our paths. And remember that tomorrow is the enemy of today. So if I'm always looking, waiting for that opportunity, that's never going to come. So what am I doing today? Your ship is not coming in, so why don't you start today building your own boat? I've hired many, many people over the years. And in the beginning, we used to hire, if somebody had a pulse, we would hire them. And today, you know what? We may spend $20,000 to hire a couple of salespeople. And we'll go through hundreds and hundreds of resumes, hundreds of interviews. And we'll even do some testing on them. And if we come to the end of the process and we're interviewing somebody and we don't feel good about it, we'll pull the plug and we'll start over. Because a mishire costs you 2 to 3 times that person's salary. Here's what I've learned. Many years ago, I would interview somebody and I would get emotionally drawn into the interview and thinking, you know, this poor person, they've just never had an opportunity. That's why they've never been successful. And then they come to work for me because I think if they just come to work for me, everything's going to be better. It never is, except for a radical conversion, God absolutely giving them a new heart and changing them. That's different. But in the natural, what they have been in the past is what they will be in the future. The best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So if you haven't been faithful in little, you're not going to be faithful in a bigger opportunity. So think about that on your end. When you're the guy that's in the interview, or you're looking for the bigger opportunity, if you haven't been faithful a little, you're not going to be faithful in the bigger. Number two, work to make those that you serve successful. So Nehemiah was a cupbearer in a heathen court, under a heathen king, Artaxerxes. He served him. And you know what? He had a good relationship with the king because when he was sad, the king inquired. The king treated him as a friend. Why are you sad, Nehemiah? See, in the process of serving that heathen boss, in the process of serving that hard father, maybe your father's not where you think he should be, God is working things out of you. He's sanctifying you. He's making you more like Christ. And if we continually want to jump out of that, jump off that altar in the greener pastures, we just keep going around the mountain. God calls those that are busy. So God gives Nehemiah a vision. He gives him a burden. Nehemiah was busy as a cupbearer. He was working. He wasn't sitting around. If you've never read the letter, A Letter to Garcia, it's a wonderful story. I love the story. So here, war had broken out. President McKinley needed to get a letter to Cuba to General Garcia. And so he went to his aides and how are we going to get this letter into the jungle? And we don't even know where Garcia is. And one of the aides said, there's a man by the name of Rowan. If anybody can get the letter to Garcia, Rowan can. So Rowan comes in. They give him the letter. They say, you need to deliver this letter to General Garcia. He puts it in his oil pouch, and he takes off. A couple weeks later, he lands on Cuba. 3 weeks later, he ends up coming out of the island on the other side, having delivered the letter to General Garcia. The interesting thing is Rowan never said, who's Garcia? Where is he? Why is this important? Why can't Fred do it? Why are you sending me? How am I going to get there? He just said, yes, sir. And he delivered the letter. We need men like Rowan that serve another. And when you serve another in that manner, you're ready for your own deal. No shortcuts. Not as men pleasers. No shortcuts when nobody's looking. We look out for their interests. We take initiative like it's our own. We protect their interests. You need to become personally indispensable. They're the one that they cannot be without. I tell people in the workplace, if you're like, you're the last guy fired, people, you know, they get downsized. Oh, I got downsized. Okay, got downsized. So bad economy, all of that. Guess who gets downsized? The people that add the least amount of value. They're the first ones to go. The last one to go before they close the door are the guys that add tremendous value. You need to be all in. You need to be committed. Okay, number three. So now you've served faithfully and you're ready to move on. And God begins to stir in you. And here's how it works. So in Nehemiah 1:1, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month Chislu, in the 20th year as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there are in the province, are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. God gave Nehemiah a burden. He began to inquire, what's going on back in Jerusalem? Maybe he was never concerned with it before. He was happy. He had a great job. He was in the king's palace. Maybe he was a little corrupted. But God begins to stir in his heart, and he begins to weep over the fact that the walls are broken down. Nehemiah takes it to God in prayer. He begins to pray. That's what you ought to do. God begins to give you a burden. He shows you something. See, the business is good. You want to earn a living. You want to be on your own. You want to have more family time. That's all wonderful and great. Those are all great objectives. But an even great objective is a business that redeems something. It restores something in the culture. I'll give you an example. Our business, our big business, we sell to physicians. Our vision is to transform the practice of medicine because medicine's all messed up. It's built on a faulty foundation. Here's another one. I have a personal interest in herbal medicine. There's so much science there, and there's so many interesting things that we've learned. But guess what? The New Agers, the Greenies, they own it. In fact, some of the biggest companies are called things like Gaia Herbs. And I look at that and it's just screaming for somebody to come in there and say, this needs to be redeemed for Christ and his kingdom. God gave them to us and we've given them to them. What is it that you see? What are the burdens that God has put in your heart? And you say, we can redeem this area for the glory of God. And here's what I like. If we can find an area where there's where we can all meet in an intersection, and right here, this sweet spot, where I take what's burning in my soul and what I'm very good at, and some of this is taken from Jim Collins' Good to Great and the hedgehog concept. What can I be the best in the world at, and what can I actually make money at? You might be really good at something, and you might be passionate about it, and it's burning in your soul, but there's just no economic incentive. But if you can find where those three are, that's where you want to be. See, we want to make sure that what we're going to pour ourselves into, economically, it's going to work. You got to do the math. Do the math on the front end. If you do all the math and say, if everything works out perfectly, I get all the customers that I could possibly get. And then it's a $15,000 a year job. That doesn't work. You got to think bigger. You got to think bigger opportunity. You got to do the math. And then you need to go out right. So you've served faithfully somewhere and now you're ready to be launched. You need to go out right. So here's what happened in my own life. My father died when I was 13 years old. My great uncle took me under his wing. And he taught me the supplement industry, taught me how to make tablets and capsules, and so much so that by the time I was 19 years old, I was actually had an opportunity to run a plant on my own, not even working for him, but working for some other people. And when I was done at the university, God pulled me out of there because I had a radical conversion. I never finished. I need 6 credits to graduate. And the Lord assured me that if I would study the book of Proverbs, he would teach me about business, which he faithfully did. But anyhow, I went to work for my uncle, and after about 3 years, our values were going this way. And any time earlier than that, I would have went in and self-righteously said, you know, I'm going to start my own thing because you don't know what you're doing and you're cheating people and da-da-da-da-da. But God had me in a school. He had me in a season. And he was teaching me about being under authority. And so here's what God, my wife and I prayed about it. We believed that it was time for me to leave and launch and go out on our own. And I applied the principle that from Proverbs that the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord and he will direct it like a water course. So I went to my uncle, who I really looked at as a father, and I said, Uncle Jim, I believe that I need to do something different, but I believe that God is going to direct me through you. Now here's an avowed atheist. Every other word out of his mouth is a curse word. And I watched God just take him, and he got very tender before me. And he said, Gary, what is it that you would like to do? I said, well, I think I'd like to go out and be a manufacturer's rep, and I'd like to go and call on doctors and to build a business. In a sense, I was going to be competing with him in a way. And he said, you know, that's what I think you should do. And as a matter of fact, I'll keep you on salary until you can get it going, and I'll pay your health insurance. Do you know that was the same thing that happened with Nehemiah? Nehemiah, when he submitted it to the king, he went out with the king's blessing. He went out with letters from the king. The king gave him provision from the king's forest. When Sanballat and Tobias come and they're going to call you off the work, they're going to say, come down off that wall. You say, not coming down. Not coming down. So that's how I launched, and that's how we had a launch. A couple years ago, there was a young man working in our Stevens Point facility. He was working on a bottling line. He was a homeschooled young man. And he came up to me one day and he said, hey, I'd really like to get into computers. And part of me wanted to say, right, every young man wants to be in computers. And most of them aren't good enough. They're not smart enough. They're not technologically savvy. It's just a cool thing. And I didn't think much of it, but a friend of mine who we hired as a consultant, he was doing some IT work, and he said, hey, Lee really wants to try this thing out. And he said, I think we ought to test him. Let's get him tested, see if he's got some skill there. So whatever he did, I don't know. He came back and said, hey, this guy's got a lot of aptitude. I think we had to give him a shot here. So I said, okay. So I said, but you gotta mentor him. And so Larry began to mentor him, and Larry taught him, you need to read a half hour every day on this one subject. And if you'll read a half hour every day on networks, within a month you'll be the expert in this company. Within 3 months you'll be the expert in the state. Within the whole deal. And so he began to do that. He began to read everything that he could. And he got his Microsoft Network certification. And you know that the day that we turned IT over to that young man, our computer issues ceased. And then there came, and he served faithfully. And he was a man of such great character. And then a day came when he came to me and he said, my family's moving to Florida. I would like to move with them. And I think I'd like to start my own computer consulting business. It was really, really bittersweet for me because I hated to lose him because he was so valuable. And yet I was so proud of what he had become. And I'm sure today he is very, very successful. And then we need to have a single focus. Number five, we need to have a single focus to launch. You need to get good counsel. You need to learn how to sell your products. Everybody's afraid of sales, but listen, hey, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you have got to learn how to sell. You have to sell your ideas. You have to sell your products. You need a key employee. I had a PhD in molecular biology that came to work for us early on as a company. And it was one of the greatest sales closes I ever made, was to convince this guy to move him away from pharma to come and work for us. So you're constantly selling. You have to learn how to do that. Here's another principle of single focus. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with all your strength. And then you take off, okay? And you start building a business. And stuff happens. And you get stuck. You're moving towards the vision, preferred future. And then you hit a ceiling. That's your capacity. And you get stuck there. And so if you're in sales, sometimes we look at guys in sales and say, you know, they can only do $500,000 a year, they do $500,000 a year. And they want to be a $2 million producer, and they can want to be a $2 million producer, but they'll never be a $2 million producer because they're a $500,000 producer. Because what got them to this level is what I call their old cash. Cash is an acronym: knowledge, attitude, skills, and habits. And what got them to $500,000 in sales is old cash. And if they want to get to a new level, they need to have new cash. See, a $2 million producer has knowledge that a $500,000 producer doesn't have. He has a completely different set of attitudes than this person has. Different skills, different habits. How about every 90 days you work on new cash? Maybe you have a $100,000 a year business, okay? You've never run $1 million business, but you want it to grow to $1 million, okay? You have to acquire the cash in order to run $1 million business. You have to be intentional about learning, about growing, about reading, about mentors and getting around people that can teach you new skills, new habits, new attitudes, and new knowledge. And then I have three rules that I love to teach. They're so simple and they're so difficult. Here's the three rules. First of all, you need to show up on time. Show up on time. You need to, number two, do what you say that you're going to do. And then thirdly, you need to finish what you start. Try living by those and see actually what God is able to do through you. In all labor, there is profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth to penury. You need to add value. Income is a function of value. The more value, the higher your income. You need to take the value that you add times the people you serve. That's your formula for income. Some of the things that you'll have to learn to do along the way, along that journey, you have to learn to not quit. You'll reap if you don't faint. You need to learn, as Churchill said, to do the distasteful. You'll have to learn to say no to lesser opportunities. You need to be singly focused. So in summary, I want to encourage you, no matter where you are, no matter what your current reality is today, no matter how old you are, how young you are, quit thinking like the Egyptians. Start living in the future. And I would challenge you to make the commitment. Make the commitment. See, there's some words that begin with C that I like to use with people. First, I start with this contentment. The Apostle Paul talked about being content in all things. He learned how to abound. He learned how to be abased. He learned to be content in all things. Contentment means I'm basically, things are okay. I'm okay with God. But how about if I throw in another word? That's complacency. Complacency is my life desperately needs to change, and I'm unwilling to change it. Here's another C word. How about commitment? See, change is good, but radical change is a transformation. Think about this. If I determine that I'm going to run every day, I'm going to run 2 miles every day at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I wake up in the morning and it's 10 degrees outside, I'm going to do what any normal person would do. I'm going to roll over and go back to sleep. But I made the commitment that I'm going to run at 5 o'clock every day, 2 miles. When convenience supersedes commitment, I've just found my true level of commitment. Think about that one. We can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Daniel says, but the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. Thank you very much.